From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the closing market report for the very last day of February. It's the 28th. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Dan Zwicker. He's at Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas. Earlier this morning, actually very early this morning, in something called the Early Riser Session, Ed Ussett, who is a grain market economist from the University of Minnesota, along with Bryce Knorr, who we heard last week on our Commodity Week program, and our regular Thursday grains analyst for the cash side, Matt Bennett, took the stage in front of about 1,000 folks. I talked with Ed late last week and got the lowdown on what he was going to tell them about. It's all about the export market. You'll hear that conversation later this afternoon. And as we wrap up our time together here on the Closing Market Report, we'll discuss the weather forecast, too, with Mike Tenor from T-Storm Weather in Chicago, Illinois.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
On this Thursday afternoon, we're joined by Dan Zwicker at Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas, to take a look at the marketplace. Hey, good afternoon to you, Dan. Thanks so much for being with us.
You're more than welcome, Todd.
Well, here it is cold and going to get colder. How's your weather today?
We're 81 down here in the valley today, so the air conditioners are running, and it's going to stay that way for a while. But I'm heading back to Waco, and it's much colder in Waco. There's a significant difference, even though I'm only 7 hours away from Waco. There's a big difference in temperature from down here at the tip of Texas all the way up to central Texas.
Speaking of cold, things have cooled off in Chicago physically and in the marketplace. Beans were down about 6 cents for the day. Corn was down 1 to 3. What'd you make of those numbers?
Well, first off, I couldn't have been more wrong last week when we talked. Last week, I was wanting to think that the lows were in place and that we were going to maybe try to rally out of here. And you were kind of pushing back on it because I talked earlier in the month about a reversal down in soybeans. Well, we got a reversal down in soybeans. We do not have the reversal down in corn, but we are closing lower for the month. But there's just really not a lot of supportive type information in the market to kind of hold it. And once this long liquidation here in the last week of February took hold here earlier in the week, Monday, it just kind of fed on itself. And here we are finishing out the month of February right down against some of the lowest lows that we've seen in months. My guess is that we've pretty well wrung out this downside, looking at some of the technical indicators, and you'll probably see some people, depending upon how the market performs on the first day of March here or early next week, if we can't see some downside follow through and the market then begins to try to bounce, people will probably want to get in on that. And we could be setting ourselves up for maybe a monthly reversal up in corn and soybeans for the month of March. So that's going to be something a lot of technicians are going to look at. One thing that I didn't realize was as bad as it was is that this winter weather that we've had throughout the Midwest has really screwed up the logistical system in moving grain from point A to point B to point C to point D. You've got high waters. I think the Ohio River is shut down because of high waters. You've had the Illinois River freeze up and thaw up and freeze up and thaw up. And then you've got a lot of grain on farm that's buried in snow. And the logistics are just horrendous, and it's going to take some while, I think, for the logistics to get straightened out, for this corn to get down to the Gulf, soybeans to get down to the Gulf and get out of this country. But we've had a pretty hard time moving grain around this winter due to the severity of it. And I think that kind of came back and kind of haunted us, because a lot of people with those positions on basically rolled those positions on into the May contracts at a pretty good carry. And now they're probably going to sit tight with those. and we'll see what, you know, what kind of spring weather we have and what the government reports show us here at the end of the month. But my guess is that this big decline, if you look at it from a broader sense, basically you've just taken the lead option corn back down to 380. We've been kind of trading in that 380 level on lead option corn. And now with the May contract, basically the functional lead option, 370. So it's down to 370 now. So that's probably when you look at a continuation chart, if you switch it over at the first day of the month, you're going to see that basically corn stays in a sideways trading range. And you're going to see the same thing with soybeans, whereas the March beans have been kind of trading up into this 910, 915 area. Now the May beans have slid down to the 910 area. So overall, I think the chart is going to be basically considered sideways, but it doesn't, you know, say too much about what's going to happen as we go, you know, on into the month of March. My guess is that we're oversold enough that we'll probably get some kind of bounce. We'll see whether or not we can get any follow through and what kind of fundamentals would come along to support a recovery rally from this week's decline.
Well, that is a good view of the marketplace. Hey, thanks so much for being with us this afternoon. And you stay warm down there once you move up to Waco, I suppose.
Yeah, I'll need my jacket once I get to Waco. But down here, I'm still in shorts. A lot of people in the swimming pool today, so it's a good day. It's a good day to be in South Texas.
Dan Zwicker is with Zwicker Consulting. Joins us from Waco, Texas. Don't forget that you can join us next week on Tuesday at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana for our All-Dag Outlook. The cost of the tickets is just $30, more than a dozen analysts. We'll do the weather. We'll talk about the markets. We'll talk about the value of farmland, and you'll get fed a Beef House meal at the noon hour, and you'll get coffee and Beef House rolls in the morning, too. Get those tickets online, willag.org, willag.org, or 800-898-1065. In today's agricultural news, just one item. The World Trade Organization has ruled in favor of the United States in its cases against China's domestic price supports for wheat and rice, and to some extent for corn. Rod Bain from the United States Department of Agriculture has more.
The chief ag negotiator of the U.S. Trade Representative's Office, Greg Dowd, perhaps offered some foreshadowing about a World Trade Organization case against China during last week's USDA Agricultural Outlook Forum.
We're going to see the results of that here very soon, I think.
And on Thursday, a WTO dispute settlement panel announced its ruling in favor of the U.S. and its case against China's domestic supports for its grain producers.
When it comes to wheat, rice, and corn, we think China has exceeded what it was allowed to do when it became a member of the WTO by somewhere in the neighborhood of, what, $80, $100 billion?
Well, exceeding its commitments under WTO rules. The U.S. in its case claims these supports have limited American wheat, corn, and rice exports from entering into the Chinese marketplace. As Ambassador Dowd noted, this particular case,
we have what our general counsel thinks is probably the biggest WTO case in history.
I'm Rod Bain reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
Here are some of the details of that WTO ruling. The panel report agreed with the United States that China provided domestic support to its agricultural producers in 2012, 13, 14, and 15, well in excess of its WTO commitments. Specifically, the panel found that China had provided support in excess of permitted levels for long grain rice, short and medium grain rice, and wheat in every year. For corn, the panel declined to make findings on support provided from 2012 to 2015, given that China had apparently changed its program in 2016, just prior to the WTO's establishment of the panel. Compliance with the WTO rules will lead to a reduction in the excessive support provided to China's grain producers and should increase market forces in China, leading to a more level playing field. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. You know, next week is our all-day agricultural outlook, and I sure hope that you have already purchased your tickets. But if not, you can go to willag.org right now and do that online. Just look for the big sign that says buy your tickets online. Click on that or call 800-898-1065. For the $30, we'll open our doors at 8 a.m. Central, 9 in the Eastern time zone there at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana. We'll have more than a dozen grain analysts on hand with us, including Ellen Dearden, Bill Gentry, Pete Manhart, Bill Mayer, Jackie Vakes, Kurt Kimmel, Wayne Nelson, Mike Zuzlow, Todd Hubbs, Aaron Curtis, Brian Stark, Chuck Shelby, and Matt Bennett. Matt, we usually talk to on Thursday afternoons, but he was doing the early risers session this morning at the Commodity Classic in Orlando. I know because I talked with him, or at least texted him. There were about 1,000 in that audience this morning. He and Bryce Knorr of Farm Futures, along with Ed Ussett from the University of Minnesota, were there. In fact, I talked with Ed last week coming into this early riser session. He tells me that Bryce does a really good job of putting things into a great big picture, that Matt in the early riser sessions brings it down to the farm level, and that his goal was to give farmers a really good look at how important agricultural export markets were to their bottom lines.
Oh boy. I go through numbers on grains, corn, soybeans. I mean, we all know that soybeans, we've been exporting half our soybeans and historically, and most of them historically have gone to China. Of course, that's slowed down quite a bit. I don't think people realize, though, that even before China was in the picture back 20, 25 years ago, we still exported 30 to 50% of our soybean crop every year and have done so for over 50 years. The same is true of wheat. We routinely export 40 to 50% of our wheat crop every year. Even as wheat acres keep going down, we think wheat is less important. We're still exporting nearly half our wheat crop. And corn, 1.5 to 2.4 billion bushels will describe our exports pretty much every year for the last 40 years, except for a handful of outliers. And, 2 billion bushels of exports, that's a heck of a lot of exports. It's important to the grains, but I go beyond that. I go into beef, pork, poultry, dairy. I just want people to understand and look at the numbers. They're just public numbers on how important exports are to U.S. agriculture.
Why?
Oh, if we don't have them, we've got big problems. You know, the livestock, beef and poultry, for example, are a great example. I can show you numbers where the level of, in terms of pounds, we import as much beef as we export. And that doesn't make any sense to people. It's like, why do we export beef and import beef? But it all comes down to consumer taste. What parts of the beef are we exporting? The U.S., we've got an incredible appetite for the high end of the beef market, your best cuts, and the low end. Incredible. The U.S. appetite for hamburger is hard to exaggerate. But the middle cuts, the roasts and the rumps and things like that, that are a little too valuable to throw in the hamburger. Thank God we find markets for those things in other countries. Or, for example, Todd, when's the last time you had beef tongue? I haven't. I never have. And yet there are cultures and countries that value that. So everybody wins if we export the parts we don't want, import the parts we want. Same thing with chicken. The U.S. market has an incredible appetite for chicken breast, white meat chicken breast. We've got businesses, restaurant chains that have built a business on what to do with the wings, you know, Buffalo Wild Wings and all these things, slather on the sauce and drink beer with them. We don't know what to do with all the thighs. And thank God we have countries and cultures that appreciate the thigh and the chicken. It gives us a market for the rest of the product.
Why is it that agricultural trade is so global, in your opinion?
Well, you've got players who are excess producers. We are blessed with something in this country called the Corn Belt. which is incredibly productive. We produce much more than we need, and not every country has that productive capability. And it all gets down to this and here's where your listeners will fall asleep, Todd, this wonderful concept of comparative advantage, how it helps everyone to stick to what they do best and trade the excess for the things they don't do as well. And some countries don't have a lot of countries don't have a productive capability, but they can produce other things. And trade is just very important for that purpose.
So the comparative advantage may be your labor force. It may be your natural resources. And that's why trade exists.
That's right. That's right. You focus on what it is you do best and trade away the surplus for things you don't do as well. And it works for all. It's a success story for all. Egg trade is important today. The trade war has got our attention, but the point I'm going to try and make in Florida, a commodity classic, I want to remind people that it's not something that became important in the last couple of years. It has been important to us for decades.
And finally, since we were on comparative advantage and the importance of trade, exports out of the United States, how do you view the comparative advantage that Brazil might or might have in agricultural products?
I don't know if I have a good answer for that. Brazil they're very productive. The soils, the landscape, they can produce soybeans and corn. Their biggest issue, I think, has been and continues to be, although they're starting to work on it, is transportation, getting it to market. And that's a big issue for them. But if they can work that out, they're going to continue to be a great competitor of ours for a long time.
Since you brought that up, I'd be amiss if I didn't ask you about the comparative advantage that the United States has in the transportation front as it relates to rail and the waterway system. Do you have concerns there at all?
Well, I know the rail system, the development of shuttle trains and that whole system has brought a new level of efficiency to agriculture over the last 15 to 20 years. And it's pretty incredible to watch. It's almost jaw-dropping to compare the loadout capabilities of a shuttle loading facility today, you know, loading a 100-car unit train in less than 8 hours to what they could do just 20 and 30 years ago. I mean, that was unheard of. So the rail side of the equation is going solid. I know there's a lot of debate about the waterways, the locks and dams and the aging infrastructure on the waterway. That's going to be a heavy debate for a long time, Todd. It's very costly and to replace those locks, to upgrade them. And then there's the whole ecological side of things that could drag on for a long, long time before we work that out. I guess I'm happy that the rail system is stepping up as good as it is.
Hey, thank you so much. We appreciate it.
Hey, Todd. Thank you. And maybe I'll see some of your listeners in Orlando.
I bet you do. Thanks so much. Ed Usett is a grain market economist from the University of Missouri. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media for this Thursday afternoon. Mike Tenura is now here from T-Storm Weather in Chicago. Mike, sure looks like there's some record cold making its way into the Midwest. What can you tell me about it?
Well, the record cold wave that will move through over the next 5 to 7 days is part of a longer-term air mass that's been in place. It's not only going to be cold over the next 10 days, but it's been very cold over the last 30 to 40 days. Check out some of these statistics. This is one of the more amazing things we've seen. If you take the northern plains, which we define as North Dakota, South Dakota, and Montana, they are going to end up with their second coldest February of the last 125 years, only surpassed by coldness in the middle of the Dust Bowl in 1936. But the thing that is more interesting than that is that if you take what's going to happen now for the next 10 days and combine that with February, we start smashing some records here for coldness. You combine February and March together for the Northern Plains. 2019 will end up being the coldest in more than 125 years across that region. If you look at the Corn Belt, the story is a little bit warmer, but it's actually not a whole lot different. The Corn Belt is going to end up being the coldest since 1979 in February. And if we add in the air mass that we know is coming up here for the next 10 days or so, we end up with about the third coldest February-March on record. And that's even allowing for the possibility of warmer weather toward the end of the month. Whether or not that happens will ultimately determine whether we start smashing some big records in the Corn Belt or if we just end up, you know, close to one of these records. But Todd, here's the most fascinating thing of all. This is the most anomalous weather event we've seen in March since 2012. 2012 was a big drought, of course, but it was the opposite situation. All the temperatures were skewed to the other side, and we were looking at one of the warmest periods ever. So 7 years later, we're looking at one of the coldest. What it means for the big picture, I'm not sure if we have an answer for that, and we won't for a while, but this is an unusual weather event, and it shouldn't go unnoticed.
What is the anomaly that has caused it?
Well, we've just seen Arctic air that has been located much further to the south than normal. Normally, this Arctic air is bottled further to the north, but it's been centered on the central and western United States here for a while. At the same time, it's been unusually warm across Europe, and this is kind of the way these air masses go. When some part of the world gets way out of whack to, say, the cold side like we are now, then somebody else ends up really warm. Same thing happens with wet and dry weather. It's also been really wet. We haven't even talked about that, but this is an incredibly wet pattern we've been in for the last 6 months as well. And just one more tidbit of information for you. If you take June, July, and August across the Corn Belt and look back over the last five growing seasons, we smashed the record for the wettest five-year period in the summer in the Corn Belt going back 120 years. So we're just in an unusual weather period. How it's going to end, when it's going to end, who knows? But, you know, this is not typical for this time of the year, and what we've seen over the last several summers has not been typical either.
Finally, you'd better check in on South America and the crops there.
Well, South America is looking a little bit wetter, certainly in Brazil. Brazil's had that long-running drought that started in November and December. It's slowly breaking now, and that's timing out pretty well for the second crop corn that's being planted as we speak. If you go to Argentina, Argentina's actually dried out quite a bit over the last 30 to 45 days. We'd be a little bit more concerned about that if there weren't some decent rains coming up on Sunday, Monday, and Tuesday of next week. So we think that whatever conditions are like in Argentina at the moment, some of this rain will help out next week. And it's also been fairly cool over the last week, which is helping to offset what was pretty significant heat about 7 to 10 days ago.
Hey, thanks so much.
You're welcome, Todd.
That's, of course, is Mike Tenura. He's with T-Storm Weather out of Chicago, Illinois. Helps us wrap up this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. I'm Todd Gleason.